Good morning.
A little improvisation.
How you doing?
Good. You ready to go?
Yeah, I'm ready to go.
It's an early July morning in Oakland, California. Claudia Mercado stands by her idling van. She's named the van Lola after a Spanish-language telenovela, Lola la Trailera.
It's about this lady who's like a trucker, but she's like badass trucker.
Oh, wow.
But she gets into all kinds of like crazy adventures.
Claudia is getting ready for a three-hour drive north into the Emerald Triangle, where much of California's marijuana is farmed.
But more like on the female lead actress.
If the Midwest is America's breadbasket, the Emerald Triangle is California's weed brownie basket.
I think eventually, then it became, or maybe it was just movies, but I remember.
Claudia is a middleman. She shuttles weed between farmers up north to dispensaries in the Bay Area. Today, Claudia is looking to source some weed for the fall.
This is like a small cottage outdoor grower, so he only does one season a year.
The plan is to visit a farm named Marty Juana.
Plants by the moon cycle, cares for the plants through the moon cycle, and then will harvest by the moon cycle.
Marty Juana is located in Covelo, a mountain valley in the Emerald Triangle. Covelo is a heavily wooded area with green trees. A lot of snow fell last winter, so the rivers are gushing with fast-moving water. It's beautiful. Once we arrive, we are greeted by Marty Klein, the farm's namesake, and Brian Kohler, Marty's business partner. Claudia busts out a gift she brought for the farmers, a pink crystal.
It's like a crystal for abundance.
Yeah. How nice.
Yeah, it seems like you guys are already doing that. Plenty of abundance around here.
Yeah. Wow, beautiful. That could probably go right by the gate.
Yeah,
right by the gate.
Claudia now gets to her sales pitch. She tells the farmers how much she admires their growing practices. Then she tells them that if they sell to her, she'll make sure they get paid.
Yeah, and I wanted to come here and prepare, too, to see your crop. Because my goal would be to, you know, bring it to market faster. And then give you some confidence that when you do harvest, you know, your product has a home and you can get paid out.
After they look at the plants, Claudia and the farmers walk down to a picnic table in the shade where Byron lights up a bong with a heat gun. Byron passes Claudia the bong. She smells the weed in the bowl.
Sweet, not like juice fruity.
Gotta hit it pretty hard. Yeah, it's a good stuff.
In 2019, passing around a bong is a perfectly normal part of a client meeting, if you're in the cannabis industry at least.
No, I tell people some weed is better than no weed.
But while legalization has changed a lot about the role of weed in society, what hasn't changed is that only some people will get a puff of the profits.
From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. And today, who gets to cash in on the so-called green rush? At the beginning of this story, our reporter, Jesse Alejandro Cottrell, rode along with a weed distributor, Claudia Mercado, who's based in California. Claudia is part of a new wave of weed entrepreneurs who have sprung up since 2016, when California legalized recreational weed.
At the stroke of midnight on New Year's, California will become the eighth state to legalize recreational marijuana. But questions remain about the new law and what it means for buyers and sellers of the drug.
Supporters of legalization celebrated, and then a legal industry worth billions of dollars was born.
A new economic forecast predicts a business boom for the marijuana industry. Sales from Florida are expected to top $1 billion. Billion.
But some were wary. In 2012, Colorado legalized recreational pot. After legalization, a Washington Post article found that of all the licenses given in Colorado for legal cultivation and sale, just a small fraction of those licenses had been given to African Americans. And for at least a few years after legalization, the law prevented people with criminal records, including for selling weed before it was legalized, from even participating in the new legal market. In the midst of a fast-growing legal weed industry in California, we sent our reporter, Jesse Alejandro Cottrell, to the city of Oakland, a city that's currently reckoning with its thriving weed industry and also with a legacy of targeting Black and brown communities for drug offenses. Here's Jesse.
Ramon Garcia is in the stockroom of his warehouse space, showing me his product.
You have flour, you have saucepans, edibles, pre-rolls, tinctures, pills, a little bit of everything. We try to.
Like Claudia, who we heard from at the beginning of the story, he's a marijuana distributor, meaning he's a middleman, collecting weed from farms and bringing it to commercial storefronts. But it's a sign on the wall that catches my attention. The sign instructs his delivery men on what they're supposed to do if they're stopped by police. He reads it to me.
Ultimately, if you're detained, I evoke my Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination and then STFU, which is just shut the f*** up and don't say anything. Excuse my language, but that's real.
When Ramon says that's real, you can tell from the look on his face that he means it, which makes sense. He's dealt in weed his whole life, and most of that time it was illegal. Ramon was raised in California by his mom and his stepdad, who had a farm with horses and vegetables. They also grew marijuana.
Both my parents grew it all the time, like whether it was at home, like in the windowsill on the back porch, up in Mendocino when I was younger.
Mendocino is a rural, hilly county a few hours north of Oakland. For decades, it has been the heart of the Emerald Triangle, where much of California's marijuana is grown. In the 1970s, as Ramon was growing up, President Richard Nixon was beginning a so-called war on drugs.
America's public enemy number one in the United States is drug abuse. In order to fight and defeat this enemy, it is necessary to wage a new all-out offensive.
Decades later, one of Nixon's top aides admitted that the war on drugs had been a way to target Black people and hippies. Nixon cracked down on all illegal drugs and made marijuana a Schedule I controlled substance, meaning it was highly addictive and had no potential medical benefits. But that didn't stop Ramon's family from growing weed. According to Ramon, his stepdad believed that the plant was a gift from Mother Nature to be used as a natural medicine. But his family also realized it was a product they could sell.
We needed to be able to pay our rent and pay the taxes, and so that was an easy way.
Ramon remembers that one of his first jobs involved tending his family's marijuana plot in Mendocino County.
Well, I mean, as a young kid, we had to sleep out in the garden, make sure the deer didn't eat the corn at that time, but it wasn't the corn that was growing in. There was corn out there, but it was something else that was growing in between. It was the marijuana.
By the age of 10, Ramon had started smoking weed occasionally. By high school, Ramon's family was living in Oakland and Ramon was selling weed. In college, he continued selling, moving from smaller amounts up to pounds of weed. In the 1980s, Ramon's burgeoning weed business was completely illegal. Nixon may have started the war on drugs, but it was Ronald Reagan who had become the war's most famous combatant. He and his wife Nancy told America to just say no. On television, commercials compared your brain on drugs to a fried egg.
This is your brain. This is drugs. This is your brain on drugs. Any questions?
The number of people in federal prison for drug offenses grew by more than 1,700%. Black and Latino people made up a disproportionately large number of those incarcerated. Oakland, with its historically large Black and Latino communities, suffered during those years. The crack epidemic hit the city hard, and Oakland's police department was and is almost as notorious as the Los Angeles Police Department for violence and corruption.
Plaintiffs claimed the rioters kidnapped them, beat them while they were handcuffed, and framed them with planted evidence. Some of those claims were actually very compelling.
In the 90s in Oakland, a band of crooked cops who dubbed themselves the Riders framed and beat up witnesses. The Riders were praised by the police for taking down drug dealers in heavily African-American West Oakland. It turned out that they were planting drugs on people to frame them. Eventually, a number of the Riders' victims sued the city of Oakland. The city settled the case, and a judge placed the Oakland Police Department under federal supervision.
They profiled. If they saw you in a certain vehicle, they saw you look a certain way.
Ramon says that as a young, brown-skinned Latino, He got pulled over by the cops all the time.
I would get pulled over by the police like at least 3 times a week, maybe 2 times a week, and sit there and they would search my car and go through the whole thing. And I'd be like, look, you pulled me over last week.
But he mostly managed to stay out of trouble until one fateful night in 1996. After getting into a fight with his wife, he drove to the beach. He wanted to relax by himself and cool off before going back to their home. So he sat in his car and rolled up a J.
And a park officer came by, park ranger. So he did the whole thing. Oh, I smell weed. And told them, you know, yeah, you might find a roach, but that's all you're going to find. So he wanted to search the car. I gave him permission. I had nothing to fear at that time. I didn't think I had anything to fear.
Ramon had a gun in the back of his car, but it was registered. He told the ranger that the gun was in his trunk, locked up in a case, as required by local law. He says the ranger opened the trunk.
He pulled out the case, shook the case, and the little lock that I had on the case popped open. He was like, oh yeah, we have a concealed weapons charge.
Ramon says that the park ranger shook the case so hard, the lock on the case broke. And when the lock broke, the ranger claimed that now it wasn't in a locked case. Ramon doesn't have his court documents anymore from over 20 years ago, and he has since gotten his record expunged, so it's not publicly available. The San Francisco Public Defender's Office was able to confirm the basics of what happened next. Ramon was arrested and charged with possession of a concealed weapon, which at the time carried a 5-year minimum stint in prison. 3 different public defenders, and a year and a half later, Ramon went to trial. Ramon explained to the judge that he was a homeowner who paid his taxes and that he'd never been arrested before.
And so he dropped it down to a misdemeanor, gave me 3 years informal probation. I had to do 1,000 hours of community service and give $1,000 to a restitution fund or something.
And now Ramon had a record, and that record made life harder. For example, when he applied to be a high school football coach, he says it was a really long process because of his misdemeanor.
It took a 6-month background check. I had to have 6 letters of reference. I had to describe the situation, sit in front of the Unified School District, explain everything just for them to approve that. Just from this one little case.
That year, in 1996, California legalized medical marijuana. But Ramon didn't go legal. He says he didn't have the capital. He couldn't afford to rent a storefront or get furniture and insurance, things that cost tens of thousands of dollars. Meanwhile, Ramon noticed that his white friends who had access to capital because of family wealth were going legit and making money doing so.
Where my friend, right, whose parents owned property up in Tahoe and they probably bought it when it was $10,000, now it's worth $3 million. He goes to his parents and say, hey, I want to start this distribution company. I need $1 million, Pop. No problem. Just take out a collateral loan. Here you go. He starts the business. He has everything that he needs to move on.
It's really hard to find precise statistics on the ethnic breakdown of ownership in Oakland weed businesses. But out of 8 permitted medical weed dispensaries in the city prior to 2016, only 1 was owned by a black person, and none were owned by Latinos. Ramon kept selling weed on the black market until 2018.
So my business is Padre Moon distribution and delivery.
Ramon and a couple business partners started Padre Moon last year. And just like that, Ramon went totally legit with his weed business for the first time since starting to sell weed decades ago. But he's still finding his footing.
And how's business going?
Slow, slow but steady. So the delivery, we launched that almost 2 months ago, and it's been slow pickup, but, you know, a few little hiccups here or there with process, but we're kind of learning through it, but it's been at least steady, right?
The reason why Ramon was able to start a business at all is because now, ironically, he's getting a little help from the city of Oakland.
Coming up, we learn about how a recent law might actually help Ramon and other Latino entrepreneurs to get a piece of California's green rush. Stay with us. No te vayas.
There are places in the United States where voting districts are made up mostly of prisoners who can't vote.
Forgive me for not having been able to articulate this the way I want to, but it's almost like your body being used.
On NPR's Code Switch, the connection between the U.S. Census, politics, and prisons.
Hey, we're back. Before the break, we were spending some time with Ramon Garcia. He's a longtime Oakland marijuana dealer who recently took his business legal. Ramon's business is starting slowly, and he faces a lot of competition. But the city of Oakland is trying to lend him a hand. Now, reporter Jesse Alejandro Cottrell takes us back to Oakland.
On a Friday morning in early May, I meet Ramon at a Hilton Convention Center by the airport. Dozens of people flit about, nibbling breakfast and reading each other's name tags as they shake hands. This is a conference and trade show for the legal weed business in Oakland.
How you doing? I'm doing well.
Ramon's business has stalled. He hasn't been able to distribute any weed recently because the state started enforcing a rule that requires compliant distribution vehicles, or in other words, Ramon needs a new van with specs the state approves before he can distribute any more weed. He was supposed to have the van already, but it took a while to raise the money.
Man, all the paperwork is signed. We were supposed to get it delivered yesterday. Now they're telling us early next week, man. It's the issues of doing business, right? Like, it's coming, though. It's already bought, paperwork signed, so now it's just delivery.
But Ramon's not focused on those troubles right now because he knows tons of people at this conference. Ramon's got a big smile on his face as he glad hands around the space.
Hey, Ramon!
This superstar over here. This Latina superstar over here.
Her name is Luz de la Riva, and on her table are rows of bottles full of lubricants and body oils.
I created a line that would extend the feeling of intimacy in a relationship to the point that in the morning, your wife is not going to be about the trash, and you will gladly take the trash out, no?
There is also a row of what looks like cigarette packs. The front of the cigarette boxes open and unfold to reveal a set of condoms, a matchbook, and four pre-rolled joints. Luz's lotions all have weed in them, too.
So I'm basically hitting two of the bigger stigmas there are: sex and drugs.
Everyone's keeping an eye out for the people with gold stars on their badges. They're the owners of brick-and-mortar dispensaries. Vendors like Luz are trying to talk to them and convince them to carry their product.
I'm planning to become a billionaire, so somebody is going to be very lucky.
All of the entrepreneurs in the room are people of color. This conference is part of a special program by the City of Oakland to promote equity in the weed industry. The idea is to put a bunch of new POC business owners in the same room with buyers, those people with the gold stars. These people are the ones who have the money to invest in weed entrepreneurs. A few hours after I meet her, towards the end of the day, I ask Luz if she has talked to any of those potential buyers.
No, not really.
I haven't seen any retailers
yet, so hopefully they'll come in soon.
I haven't seen many Gold Star badges either. This conference is just part of the City of Oakland's strategy to reckon with the legacy of the war on drugs.
Should I take my shoes off?
Desley Brooks is an African-American woman who served as an Oakland City Council member from 2002 to 2018. She was in office during a period of time that saw the rise of medical marijuana in California. Many of these businesses operated in a legal gray zone, but Desley says that the white-owned businesses were treated differently.
If you looked at the data, you saw a system where we knew where white folks were running cultivation operations and selling wheat, but we didn't take them to jail. But we took the street-level people to jail.
The city studied what had happened in Oakland since weed went legal 20 years prior. And what they found was that white marijuana entrepreneurs had started weed cultivation, manufacturing, and dispensary businesses. And the Oakland Police Department had mostly left those businesses alone. Some, like Harborside Health Center in Oakland, flourished and became businesses worth tens of millions of dollars. In that same time period, Black and Latino people were arrested for weed crimes at a much higher rate than white people. So when recreational legalization came around, almost all of the successful weed businesses in Oakland were owned by white people.
When the state legalized cannabis, this or marijuana, this was prohibition. This was legalization of alcohol. And white folks made plenty of money on that. I wasn't going to let this opportunity go by. And people who look like me didn't have that same opportunity.
So in 2016, Desley introduced an amendment designed to encourage people victimized by the war on drugs to start weed businesses. This law came to be known as the Cannabis Equity Program.
The city of Oakland has a controversial new plan to regulate marijuana businesses. Half of new permits to operate a marijuana business would go to the perceived victims of the war on drugs.
In order to qualify, new business owners would have to meet two of three criteria: make below 80% of the city's median income, live in a high-crime neighborhood in Oakland for a decade, or have been convicted of a marijuana-related crime. The idea was to remove some obstacles to help them get started by waiving inspection fees, giving loans, and providing rent-free space. There was some opposition to this idea. Some weed business owners complained that the proposed equity program only helped entrepreneurs in Desley's district and not others who lived elsewhere and had also been affected by the war on drugs. And they feared new restrictions on licensing would cause a bureaucratic bottleneck. Desley says some criticisms of the program seem racially charged.
People came to council meetings and said that people of color and Black people weren't capable of running businesses. They literally said that in liberal Oakland, California.
In a recording of an Oakland City Council meeting in May of 2016, when the equity law was being debated, Trevor Mazza, a marijuana entrepreneur, got up and spoke.
I think most everyone in this room would agree that the ongoing and highly discriminatory practices embedded within the war on drugs has disproportionately victimized minorities and people of color.
He told the crowd he was against the war on drugs, but then he went on to say that his business partner had a PhD, and some elements of the weed business required entrepreneurs with a higher education.
And as a matter of safety, we believe all cannabis extraction should be done by a chemist with a degree in a lab-safe environment. It's unlikely that a person with these credentials, no matter their skin color or ethnicity, are going to live in a high-crime, low-income area of Oakland. It's not discriminatory, it's just the reality of the situation.
In the end, the program was tweaked and voted into law. Shortly after it was passed, other cities followed suit, including San Francisco and Los Angeles. The state of California now has an equity program too. According to Desley, the program cost her politically. In 2018, months after the equity law came into effect, Desley was unseated from the city council after having served for 16 years.
I don't think it's perfect. I don't think there's any legislation that comes out the box perfect. But you know what? I would do it all over again. All over again. It was that important. If we had set up a system that allowed a clear path to the so-called pioneers who had always been making money in this to just go forward, then we would have done a disservice to the vast majority of our residents.
I was born in Juchipila, Zacatecas. I came when I was eight years old with my family, and we came here with a tourist visa.
Remember Claudia Mercado from the top of the story? She's been one of the stars of this program since it started a year and a half ago.
So we came here, and then we just stayed because my dad happened to get actually an apartment in Oakland on 36th Avenue and went from working in the fields to being a busboy at a restaurant, which was a big thing for our family.
When she was a child, she and her family immigrated without papers from Mexico. They moved to Oakland's working-class Jingletown neighborhood. Unlike Ramon, she has a background in business. She has her MBA. And she's run businesses before, owning a successful restaurant with her wife before getting into the weed industry.
I meant to jump into cannabis, but I didn't because we opened the restaurant, Astacali. But I still kind of kept an eye on it. And I run the restaurant. We close the restaurant down. And then I said, okay, well, let's go find a building.
Cali Bueno opened for business in 2018. And after a few months, business started to pick up. Kavya could barely keep up with all the orders she was receiving. But then, in January of 2019, the company was robbed.
Come on in.
Thank you.
Yeah, so we took all the windows. They broke through here.
And there were windows here before.
Yeah, there were windows here before, so.
Late one January night, Claudia was woken up by her security company calling to tell her that the Cali Bueno storage warehouse was being broken into. At the time, she and her wife were sleeping in a building nearby.
So I shut the door, got in my car, and just booked it and just went around the corner. And the guy saw me and they took off. But there was bags of product that they accidentally dropped just all over the floor, like thousands of dollars just in the floor lost. And then you walk into the facility and there's jars everywhere. All the doors are broken into.
The thieves took $90,000 of product from Claudia. It was a gut shot. Claudia and her wife considered closing down Cali Bueno. But little by little, they got Cali Bueno back on its feet. During that van ride up to Mendocino County in early July, she tells me things are going so well that the company doesn't even qualify to receive help from the city of Oakland anymore. Essentially, she's graduated from the equity program. I've never seen anyone smile so big when telling me that they lost their tax breaks.
And we're paying our taxes, so yeah, I guess we graduated. We're like sophomores now? We were freshmen last year, we're sophomores. Yeah, so now it's like, now we have to get ready for success. And my last name is Mercado for a reason.
Her last name means market in Spanish. While a number of POC-owned weed businesses like Claudia's are growing, none of them have gotten as big as the most successful white-owned businesses in Oakland. Over the last year, Canadian investment firms bought two white-owned Bay Area weed dispensaries for assets worth over $100 million apiece. While the equity program was initially praised far and wide, over the last year, it suffered a lot of criticism. The San Francisco Chronicle profiled equity program participants whose businesses were failing. Many of them said they didn't have enough starting capital to give them a real fighting chance to survive. Part of the reason why Claudia is doing well now is that she brought a lot of corporate experience and education to her new business. She went to very good private schools on scholarships, had her master's degree by 25. By the time she did start Cali Bueno, she had enough capital to rent her own warehouse and buy many of the capital items needed to start a new weed business. In fact, she didn't even feel she needed the equity program at first.
I'm an educated woman of color, and I want to show up and let them know that a Latina from Jingletown can show up and pay her dues, because I had.
But other equity program participants, like Ramon, didn't start with those sorts of privileges.
Oh, yeah. So this is the van you just got the other day.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, cool. What do you think? How do you like it?
Man, it's a $40,000 piece of equipment. It's wonderful to have.
A few weeks after the weed conference, Ramon finally has his van.
It's brand new, 2017 Ford Transit. It has the extra lock here. You look inside, it's just straight open. We have six cash lock boxes in there. And we have cameras that record on a DVR 24 hours as we're driving.
But it's a bittersweet moment for Ramon.
For me, it's been a four-year battle just trying to come up with the $30,000 to buy this van, right?
For the wealthier investors in the weed market, buying the van would have been a simple, quick purchase. After decades of selling weed illegally, Ramon has finally gone legal. But he has some mixed feelings about it.
It's like the double-edged sword. It's totally exciting. It's
I never thought I would see the day, like seeing Obama as a black president. Like, then on the other end, it's super depressing.
He says it's frustrating to see other businesses in Oakland sell for millions of dollars or attract major investment.
But here I've been pounding out trying to get a measly $150,000, $200,000 investment, and I'm too small to invest in. And here my family has been growing this plant for 50 years. This should have been invested into the people that have been doing this in California for 100 years.
If weed had been legal for 50 years, maybe Ramon and his family would have a legal weed empire by now. Talk of the new legal weed industry in California, they call it the Green Rush. It's a play on words that references the Gold Rush of 1849, which made San Francisco a boomtown. One of the things they teach you about the Gold Rush, if you grow up in California, is that it wasn't the prospectors sifting through dirt for gold nuggets who got rich. It was the people who sold shovels, dry goods, even blue jeans to the prospectors. They're the ones who made money. Just like in the modern Green Rush, it's the business owners who started ahead who stay ahead.
This episode was reported by Jesse Alejandro Cottrell and edited by Sofia Palizacar and Fernanda Camarena, with production help from Miguel Macias. The Latino USA team includes Antonia Cerejido, Janice Yamoka, Maggie Freeling, and Alisa Escarce. We had help this week from Ginny Montalvo and Maya Cueva. Fact-checking by Nidia Bautista. Special thanks to Lucas Southard. Our engineers are Stephanie LeBeau and Julia Caruso. Our production manager is Natalia Fidelholtz. Our digital team includes Julio Ricardo Varela and Amanda Alcantara. Our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow is Fernanda Uriegas. Our interns are Adriana Tapia and Juan Diego Ramirez. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. And if you like the music you heard on this episode, be sure to stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. I'll see you there. Ciao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by California Endowment, building a strong state by improving the health of all Californians, and the Wincote Foundation. Funding for Latino USA's coverage of A Culture of Health is made possible in part by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.
I am not and will not claim to cure anything with my products. But if happiness is a cure, you be the judge of that.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, you might not be able to name any of his songs, but when you hear them, you'll remember you've danced to every single one of them.
Technically, I'm Cuban American, so I'm already politically incorrect.
My revealing conversation with Pitbull. That's next time on Latino USA.